I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. You can find either one of the live video shows on either Thursday at 7 p.m. or Sundays at 12:05. And now, on with the show. I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. I want to welcome you to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. This is episode 143. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about some Masters of the Universe collectibles. We're going to be going really super retro and vintage this evening. But beyond that, we're also possibly going to be talking a little bit about the Scarlett Johansson thing that's breaking right now, and also talking a little bit about the Ghostbusters Afterlife trailer, if we have time. I want to welcome you to the show. My name is Dave Beatty. I'm one of your hosts for nearly the last 30 years. I've been a professional illustrator and graphic designer, worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman, Incorporated, Justice League of America, and even Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my co-host. This is a great Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks who will be watching or listening at home some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello, everybody. I'm Eric Alexander, also known as Bass God 14. That's Bass God 14, not Bass God. That's Bass God, like a bass guitar. And I am the Chief Financial Officer of Bad Bob Productions. Currently, I am the Executive Producer on a film called Staycation, which has been doing filming ongoing in California and on Zoom and all over the place.
Very cool. All right, I want to encourage those of you who are watching, please comment from wherever you are. We like to call it the Rogues Gallery. Please comment from wherever you are. We'd love to put your comments up in relation to the various topics we were talking about this evening. Your opinion matters to us. We want to know what you think about the topics that we're discussing this evening. All right, so let's just go ahead and get into the main topic. We're going to be talking about Masters of the Universe collectibles. On the top of the show here, let me just start off by saying I did not get a chance to do a lot of price research into these items. However, the little bit of price research I did do, they are fairly expensive. So we're going to just kind of go from there. So tell me, Eric, I'm sure you had some Master Universe stuff when you were a kid, right?
I was more into G.I. Joe and Transformers for sure growing up, but I did have a decent collection of He-Man, especially like Wave 1 type stuff. Like I remember I had He-Man, I had Skeletor, I had Teela, I had quite a few. I had Trapjaw, Beastman. Those are a couple that just come to my mind right off the top of my head. And then, I remember I had, Skeletor's cat, was it Panther?
Panthor. I think it was.
So Panthor. So I remember he liked it because it had the little felt thing on it, so you could, as opposed to actually Battle Cat, which was just, he was just plain. But I don't know what happened to all that stuff.
Do you mean this one?
I do mean that one. That's exactly what I mean. Let's show that to everybody right there. So
there you go.
I don't know what happened to all that stuff, honestly. I don't know if it's in boxes somewhere. A lot of stuff growing up, a lot of my toys, especially if I stopped playing with them, which again, like I said, I was much more into G.I. Joe and Transformers, and I held on to that a lot longer than any other toys that I collected or owned as a kid. And what would often happen is toys I didn't play with, my mom would send to my cousins in Mexico, and I have a sneaking suspicion that's what happened to my He-Man collection. The only thing I have left, and I did consider actually bringing it from my mom's house, is a few comics. And the only reason I decided not to is they were reprints back in the day. Okay. And to this day, I think they still do it to a much lesser extent. Back in the day, you might remember you could go to Toys R Us or something like that, and they would have these pre-packaged comics, and they would actually be sealed, in a plastic bag. And sometimes they were overprint, if you will, overstock. But a lot of times A lot of times they were reprints. And generally when I was getting it back into the day, they were reprints. So that's pretty much the only thing that I know that I still have of anything He-Man is those old comics, those old comics from back in the day. And again, I think they're reprints, so they're pretty much worthless.
All right, well, there you go. Well, so we're going to start off. I'm going to start off by talking about this particular book. I do have a better image of this, but I just wanted to show you. This is my actual physical copy. And I said before that when I think it was Mattel released some of the original He-Man figures, I actually, my brother actually gave me a gift of quite a few of them. And then I actually had purchased a few. So among the ones I actually have in my collection, which I didn't dig them out of the closet because they're in the bottom of the closet here in the studio and in flight going through all that. But I do have the newer versions, not the Origins, not the ones that are out now, but the ones from before that were part of the Mattel's Collector Club. But the ones I have is He-Man, Skeletor, Beastman, and Battle Cat. And the reason I have those is because this is one of the first mini comics I ever got with my He-Man action figures. I have kept it from that day. And those were the original release figures in my mind. So that's why I have those particular ones. They actually correspond with this little mini comic here on the back. So along those lines, I want to talk about this particular one because this was my introduction to He-Man, everybody. This is before the cartoon. This is one of the earliest mini comics. This is from He-Man and the Power Sword. And in my mind anyway, this is He-Man's first appearance, Skeletor's first appearance, you name it. This is all their Teela, you name it. Sorceress, this is all their first appearances. But I wanted to showcase this particular one because if you look at this, this is the way I always thought of He-Man. He was a barbarian who left his tribe. I talked about this in the previous episode, and I thought it'd be neat to kind of get into this a little bit. Eric, do you remember this? Do you remember Barbarian He-Man?
Yeah, I had the comics as well, the mini comics, obviously, that came with the figures that I had. And He-Man was one of the figures that I had. So I had the mini comics and I read them, but it's been a very, very long time. And I don't know whatever happened to those. I wish I still had them because I remember really liking them. And I thought that was sort of a cool gimmick. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, there basically is sort of like a He-Man multiverse, if you think about it. And yeah, you're right. This is the first appearance of He-Man. This is the original origin of He-Man, you know, before the Filmation cartoon even came out.
And one of the reasons I wanted to showcase and spotlight this particular mini comic, because in my opinion, this is some of the best, like this artwork is absolutely incredible. It inspires me to this day. But this is by Alfredo Alcala. And this stuff is absolutely incredible. And I also wanted to just talk a little bit and showcase actually, this is my introduction to Skeletor, everybody.
There you go.
One of the things I thought would be interesting to talk about is you can tell as illustrated by this, you know, the idea of the Power Sword being two halves, you know, a lot of these different ideas actually come from the original mini comics, and Skeletor actually had half of the Power Sword in the original story. And what's interesting about this too is I talked before about this idea that, you know, Skeletor originally was not from Eternia. He was actually from basically another dimension. Were you aware of this, Eric, that Skeletor's original appearance, he was actually from another dimension?
Yeah, I kind of always assumed that he was. I mean, why else would he look that way? So, you know, it's one of those things that I don't know how I feel about the current continuity or even some of the Filmation continuity. I don't think they were totally overt in displacing this. I do know they got a lot into, especially when they introduced She-Ra with Hordak and the fact that Skeletor was basically like partnered with Hordak.
Right.
They kind of added a little bit more layers to what his origin was as far as that continuity. But I like the idea that he is from another universe. I don't like a lot of the other stuff that they've decided to do. I mean, I don't know, the Keldor stuff, I'm just like, it doesn't really do anything for me. I know a lot of people, especially this is a Collector's Corner segment, a lot of people are looking for that figure that comes with Trapjaw, you know, that's out in, yep, in Target and some other places. Which, by the way, it's kind of funny because it's, at least in my market, that two-pack is now a peg warmer. It's very readily available. It was scarce when it first came out, but now every time I go to Target looking for Marvel Legend figures, that two-pack is there. It's literally becoming a peg warmer. So I'll be honest, I've never really been into that. I mean, I kind of like this idea better. That Skeletor is from another dimension because he is so otherworldly looking, right? With the skull and everything like that. It just makes sense to me. And I would love to hear what the Rogues Gallery, if you guys have some thoughts on these original origins of these characters, because Hollywood Jackson, he's in the house. He says, hi,
hi Hollywood.
Hi, Hollywood. It's good to see you. And David Mont says, his mind is blown. I did not know this. So we're actually giving him some information here about the original origins of Skeletor and He-Man. And again, I do concede the fact that you do kind of have to look at these as almost like different continuities, almost like a multiverse, if you will. You know, there's the original comics that came with the figures. There's the Filmation cartoon. You know, there's been other cartoons since. So in a lot of ways, there is multiple continuities of He-Man at this point.
Right. True. But I just thought it'd be interesting to bring this up. And I'm the other thing I'm doing, too, is I am spotlighting the incredible artwork by Alfredo Arcala. But it's interesting because it's interesting, too, because his original motivation, you know, part of his motivation was to get back home. You know, once I lived in another dimension, populated with others of my kind. But when the Great War opened a hole in the dimensional wall, I was thrown into this world with the complete power sword. Oh, wait, he says, thrown into this world, but with the complete power sword, I shall reopen that hole and take my people here to conquer this dimensional world. So it's just kind of an interesting thing. So
who is Beastman carrying there? Do you know? Is that Teela?
That's Teela. She's very much a damsel in distress in this very, very first mini comic. So
interesting.
Yeah, she's definitely a damsel in distress in the first one.
Teela. That's interesting.
And so is the sorceress for that matter. Which
the toy didn't have blonde hair, did it? I don't remember having blonde hair. That's interesting too.
Well, you have to remember this is the very, very first one. Very, very first one. So let's go ahead and get into it. So this is going to be our first comic we're going to talk about. This is going to be your first appearance, everybody, as far as I could tell. At least that's what I've decided to ordain this. I am ordaining He-Man and the Power Sword is the first appearance of He-Man, Skeletor, Man-at-Arms, Beast-Man, Teela, Castle Grayskull. It doesn't matter what it is, everybody. I really think that this original mini-comic, this one I'm holding here in my hands, I really think this is your first appearance. This is from 1982, Mattel, mini-comic, Masters of the Universe. Again, this is He-Man and the Power Sword, but it doesn't have a number. This is what I believe to be the first appearance. Now, I don't have a lot of pricing information on this. This one is kind of scarce and kind of hard to find. But I have seen prices all over the place, anywhere from, you know, a couple dollars to a really ragged, beat up one, upwards to, you know, almost $1,000 for the original four mini comics. So, you know, this one probably could get kind of pricey, but if you're a He-Man collector, if you're a fan of Masters Universe, I really think that it all starts with this one. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I decided to just look online just for the heck of it. And I can see an eBay listing right now for $135 for this one.
Yeah, it's right going to be pricey.
$135.
It's going to be pricey.
It's interesting because, you know, honestly, I remember keeping these. Now, I don't know where mine are anymore. Obviously, I think that they're gone, but, you know, they might be in a box somewhere. I don't know. We ended up having to move, so a lot of our stuff ended up in boxes. And to this day, we need to go through a lot of that stuff. But you'd think, at least in my mind, you'd think kids would keep these, but I guess a lot of kids didn't. They just tossed it, maybe without even reading it.
Well, it's funny because I kept a lot of this stuff. But this one right here, the scan you see is of my copy. My copy is heavily, heavily red. My copy still serves as a source of inspiration. I love the figure drawing. I love the ink work in this. The coloring, which looks like it's done with a watercolor, is incredible. Like, just the art alone in this mini comic. Now, they do have a collected version that you can get that Dark Horse actually published. I don't have that particular collection of mini comics because I own so many of the actual physical original ones. But let's go ahead and segue from that, unless anyone in the Rogues Gallery has any comments. Let's go ahead and segue into our next one for this evening.
But the one thing I really like about the mini comics also is I like the gimmick. I think it was cool that they kind of had that added value to the figures where it came with a little comic book. I think that was cool.
Now, this is going to be the second one I want to talk about. This is another key appearance in my mind. This is 1983. Again, another Mattel mini comic. This one is Dragon's Gift. I have a copy right here in my ink-stained fingers. In addition to that, you have the image there on your screen. Now, the thing that's interesting, and again, this one too, all the artwork in this one, Alfredo Alcala, everybody. This guy's incredible, absolutely incredible, incredible artwork. He actually did quite a few really memorable issues, actually inking over John Byrne, actually in the sort of Conan magazine back in the day. The thing that's interesting about this one, and I did some scans. I didn't get some time to actually pull it together, but this is the Grandemere's Gift, essentially, episode of the Filmation cartoon. The reason I picked this one out is because this mini comic specifically delves into Tila's backstory, you know, and it gets a little bit obviously, like, you know, Man at Arms is frozen and they have to go to the spoiler alert. They have to go to the dragon Grandemere, and Grandemere is able to actually give them what they need to get Man at Arms freed from the spell that he's under the control of. Now, one of the reasons I picked this particular one is because you can check out my review of the new show that we're not going to mention its name on the last episode. And I think if they're going to undo some of this stuff, I would not be surprised if Grandemere is involved. So if you're a collector, I think this one might be interesting to pick up because this is your first appearance of Grandemere the Dragon. In addition to that, this is a very important one actually for Tila as well. So I specifically picked this one because if you did enjoy the new show, I have a weird feeling that Grandemere is going to be involved in undoing some of what was done in the last episode if they're going to walk it back. So regardless of how you feel about the show, there you go. If you're interested in collecting, and like I said, you can't go wrong with this one. Artwork by the great Alfredo Alcala. The artwork in this is absolutely incredible. Anyway, I can't highly recommend this one enough. This is going to be our second pick for this evening. Again, 1983 Mattel mini comic, Dragon's Gift. What do you think about this pick, Eric?
I did go ahead and look this one up too, and this one appears to be much more affordable. I'm seeing prices as low as $4. So apparently this one is pretty common and people kept it. Do you know what figure it was packaged with? I'm curious about that.
You know, it's been so long, I don't remember. And it's weird too, because I seem to remember my this one, the He-Man, the Power Sword, actually coming with Man at Arms. Because I think this one actually came with my first Masters Universe figure. I think this came with Man at Arms, but I don't remember what this came with. It's just been too long.
It's really interesting. The huge difference in value between the one you were just talking about and this one. Now, David Motz has a good question here, and let's see if you can address this, Dave. I'm not sure if you own this one. I know we've talked about this one before because we've talked about Superman and He-Man together. So David Motz has a question. Says, why do they say DC Comics presents number 47 is the first appearance of He-Man? And I do know what you're talking about there, David Motz. That's the appearance that they had with He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Superman.
Right.
Masters of the Universe.
So it's credited as the first appearance because it's one, it's a traditional comic book. And then number two, it is the first, the first appearance in an official comic book. These are mini comics. So depending upon how diehard of a collector you want to be, they're going to say these don't count because they're mini comics. So that's part of what I think we're looking at, David Motz. And that is his first appearance in a comic book. But I feel like that these count, specifically this one counts. So I'm going to say this is his first appearance. I'm kind of bucking the trend there. But this is the one that came with the action figures. This is the one that was the original origin for He-Man. These are the first appearance of your characters. So in my mind, this is the first appearance of He-Man in a comic book, but it is a mini comic because you could tell it's a lot smaller. I do have a comic pick for this evening, which we're about to get to, but you could tell the mini comic is obviously a lot smaller comic book. So,
a lot of people used to call them ash cans.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's definitely a thing. You know, the before people were saying mini comics, we used to call them ash cans.
Right. So, like I said, that's pretty much your answer, David Motz, is that, you know, it is his first appearance in an official comic book. But I personally feel like the mini comic, which precedes that, that came with the toys, actually predates that. And I feel like that should actually technically come first. But that's my opinion. That's my opinion.
So it's like the toys came out, I guess, February of 1983. Does that sound right? Because what they're saying here, the stuff that I'm looking at, says that the figures came out in February, but that DC Presents did come out in July of 1982. Says it was published April 8th, 1982. So that's what I'm seeing right now. I don't know if
that's copyright 1981.
What's that?
This is 1981.
1981 is when
this is 1981.
When the first figures came out.
Yep. And this mini comic came with the original, some of the original figures, because that's when I got this. So this is 1981. This predates that. That's why I'm saying this to me there is the go. First appearance.
So there you
this
go.
This is David 1981. Fox.
Because I'm looking up DC Comics Presents Volume 47, you know, Volume 147 right now, and it says that that was published April 8th of 1982. So there you go. There you go.
And my date here at the top, everyone, is wrong. It says 1982. I mistakenly put on there because there's a very tiny little line that I mistook as a copyright line. I'm going to admit something I don't want to admit. My eyesight, as I'm getting older, is getting a little dodgy. I actually have a special pair of glasses back here when I'm sitting at the my animation disc over here and I'm working in the morning. That's like specifically to magnify things because my eyes are I'm getting old, everybody, in case you can't tell by this white. And I mistook this because actually what this says at the bottom, it says more Masters Universe characters and vehicles available later in 1982. But the actual copyright line is actually right here on the bottom down here, and it very clearly states Mattel Incorporated 1981.
There you go. So there you go, David Motz. So, and then David Motz is saying first published appearance with a little smile there. So
yeah, I know. I mean,
that would be the argument, right? That would be the argument back and forth. So
comic fans love to argue about things. Let's argue about this instead of this other stuff. You know,
exactly.
This stuff I think is more fun to talk about. And then, let's see. And then you're monitoring the comments there in the Rogues Gallery. If anything else comes up that you want to put up, throw it out there. All right. So
yes, we have another comment here about.
All right, let's go for it.
About the next one, about the one that you were just talking about before.
All right, with Grandemir.
So, AJ was saying that it was packaged with Tila and also Battle Armor Skeletor, which is interesting because if it's Battle Armor Skeletor, that makes sense to me why it might be common, because Battle Armor Skeletor was a later addition, right? That was a later figure. It wasn't one of like the original ones. So,
and we're going to be talking about Tila here in just a moment.
Specifically, she's talking about the dragon out one. So thank you, AJ. Yeah. We appreciate
thank
that.
You.
We were trying to figure that out as far as what this one came with. By the way, I always loved this storyline in the Filmation cartoon with the dragons. I remember my brother really liked it too. We both really liked that storyline and that character. We thought it was really, really cool. So I remember that very, very well.
Very cool. All right. So that's my second pick for this evening.
Back at you, Aja. Hugs all around.
You're too kind. So that's the second pick for this, my second pick. And then we're going to go ahead and go to the last pick here. And then I have a whole bunch of He-Man collectible stuff to show you here from my personal collection. Again, I don't know the values of a lot of these things, but I just want to show you guys just a small bit of my He-Man collection. And I want to start off... let's go ahead and talk about this mini comic here just real quick. I'm just going to throw it out there. I did not scan anything from this one, but this is the one right here, and this is the Search for Keldor. It's got Sorceress there on the cover. What makes this particular one interesting, everyone, is that this one right here, the Search for Keldor, okay? This one is kind of neat because, number one, it features two characters I quite liked, Scareglow and Ninjor. I talked about my fascination with ninjas, so Ninjor is on here. And then Scareglow is also on here, which I really, really liked. But the thing that makes this one unique, if you turn to the first page and you'd be like, what? this is written by Stephen Grant, a great Moon Knight writer. But in addition to that, this is drawn by Bruce Timm.
Oh, wow. Very cool. That's awesome.
And I have an extra one of these if you want it, Eric. I'm going to drop that in the mail to you.
Yeah, I'll take it. For those of you that don't know, Bruce Timm is one of my favorite comic book artists. So I absolutely love his style and everything like that. And that's so cool that he did some of this stuff.
And I got tons of these mini comics, everybody. Like I got, I don't know, this is only just a small portion of them. They're easy to get to. There's more in the closet. I kept a lot of this stuff. And then over the years, I've had people give me things too. And I actually, too, Eric, I also have for you, I'm going to throw in the mail too. I have an extra copy actually of Dragon's Gift I'm going to send you as well.
So yeah, I really like that storyline in the cartoon. So I'd be interested to see what the storyline was in those originally mini comics.
And you know what? I have three copies. So maybe we'll give one away tonight for those people who are commenting on the show.
There you go. That would be very cool. Very, very cool. Awesome.
All right. So let's go ahead and get to the regular sized comics here real quick.
I will mention real quickly, I did another real quick search.
Okay.
That particular book, I'm seeing a listing of $50 on eBay. So you can see how these books are kind of all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly the rhyme or reason. I'm kind of thinking, I'm wondering if this is one of the first times we saw the Sorceress in these mini comics.
This one's going for $50?
Yeah, well, it's a listing for $60.
Oh, list. Okay.
It's sold for that, but it is listed at the listing that I found. I only found one. It's listed at $50 right now. So kind of interesting to see, you know, that right now the graph is kind of like this. Ooh, and then it starts to go back up again. So, because the previous one was like $5. So.
So for the next one, and this is going to be the last pick recommendation, and then for the rest of this stuff, I'm just going to show you guys some of the stuff in my collection. I'm going to actually recommend the whole miniseries. It's a 3-issue miniseries. These books are not cheap anymore, but they were cheap once upon a time. But the main one we're going to focus on this evening is going to be this one right here. This is Masters of the Universe number 1. This is published by DC Comics. Let's go ahead and let's put that main graphic up. This is basically my pick. Now, this book, you used to be able to get this book really cheap, like really crazy cheap. You can't really get it super cheap anymore. I'm kind of breaking my rule about the $20 thing because basically a lot of this vintage stuff I wanted to talk about tonight is pretty pricey. And yes, it isn't a Mylar, and no, I am not taking it out. So this is going to be the main pick for this evening. I really believe if you scrounge around and you look around, you could probably still find a copy of this somewhere that someone's got or someone's selling at a yard sale, whatever, and get it pretty cheap. Besides the appearance, obviously, and the DC Comics presents, this is a super, super early, early appearance. To me, again, as I always do, if you're going to only own 2-3 He-Man comic books, mini comic books, what have you, in my mind, you know, the ones I'm going to highly recommend is going to be that He-Man and the Power Sword, Dragon's Gift, and then this particular one that's here on the screen. I feel like these are kind of your key ones. A lot of really important early key appearances in these. So this is my pick for this evening. Tell me, Eric, what do you think about this pick?
Well, David Mott says starting bid. So He's just kidding. But I'm very familiar with the fact that DC did a Masters of the Universe line. Like I said, I have a few of the issues from the DC Comics line, but I believe the reprints, as I was talking about earlier. So, I never read a lot of these comics. I never read a lot of the He-Man DC comics. So I'd be curious to know if they, you know, what the continuity is like. Is it, does it more follow what they did with the mini comics? Does it more follow Filmation? Is it considered like a continuation of Filmation or prequel? Or how does it fit in terms of continuity? Or is it, in fact, its own continuity?
Well, here's the scary thing. I read this comic book in a very, like a very, very long time ago. And I honestly, to be honest with you, Eric, I really don't remember. It's been so long since I've read this one. I'd actually have to crack it open and look at it, and I don't want to.
I understand that. I definitely understand.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've read this one. I honestly don't remember anymore. I remember the mini comic because this one isn't in anything, and I look at it all the time because the artwork is, I mean, to be honest with you, the artwork in this one is stronger than this particular book that we've got here on the screen. This is really the one I would like super recommend, but this one is hard to find and it's not cheap. And the irony of it was, I thought this one would be more affordable, but this one ain't cheap neither. This one's also expensive. So it's amazing to me.
I'm seeing a listing right now for $50. That's not too bad.
Yeah. And I saw some, you know, anywhere from 30, rough. It seemed like 30 was about kind of where you're floating, unless you get one that's graded. So I would tend to think probably about 30 is good for this one. But, you know, if you really want one, 50 is not bad. I mean, I would try to get the whole mini series though. But it has been a long time since I have actually read this particular miniseries. And then along those lines, I have so many other versions of the He-Man, because pretty much every He-Man comic series that's ever come out, I've always bought like at least the first couple of issues, including the recent DC Comics relaunch that I mentioned actually last episode that Scott Clark and I actually pitched to work on. When we found out that DC was developing it, we reached out to those editors and we're just like, hey, you know, we'd love to work on this. And Scott sketched up some killer stuff and they kind of just passed us over, just like they passed us over to work on a reboot of Wildcats too.
Oh, that sucks. That sucks.
Yeah, that's how it goes. It's their toys. They don't want to let you play. They're not going to let you play.
Mention that when I did a search for that particular book, there was a graded example of DC Comics Presents 47. It's actually a 9.8, and it's, you know, actually, you know, cart, you know, it's actually graded, and it's listed at $10,000, David Motz.
Yeah.
$10,000 for a 9.8 of that DC Presents comic you were talking about.
And then the irony of that is I don't own that particular one. I can't remember. I thought I bought a copy and gave it to my brother, but I can't remember. But if I did, it was a long time ago, a very long time ago.
David Motz, we can only hope. He says maybe in a few years when the buzz is gone, the price will drop. I hope so. But, you know, that brings up another point that we like to bring up in the collector's corner, David Motz, which is sometimes when we're talking about a particular item and maybe you don't have an emotional attachment to it, maybe this is a good time to get rid of it because maybe it is.
Yeah.
And if it's because there is a lot of buzz right now about Masters of the Universe, good and bad, but just like, you know, that old Hollywood expression, all publicity is good publicity. So it definitely, I think, will increase the prices. So if you have this and you don't really have an emotional attachment to it, it might be a good opportunity to get rid of it, or at the very least get it graded if it's in good condition. You know, you might want to go ahead and fork over the money to do that, especially, you know, with some of those prices. I, by the way, when I did my little search, I didn't see any graded copies, by the way. So I don't know what the population of that is graded. I'm just doing this stuff on the fly, basically doing Google searches, because David mentioned that he didn't have a lot of pricing information. So as we're talking, I'm kind of just checking on Google to see if I can find anything. But Aja has a good question, which is, but do you own the powers? Do you own the Sword of Power, sir? We need to find you one. If not, do you own the Sword of Power?
No, I don't have a Sword of Power here. So, I mean, I have like the two halves because they all came with the action figures. But I mean, I don't have like a life size one.
There you go.
So,
I used to have a cool thing actually, which was at San Diego Comic Con one year. They were doing a promotion. I can't remember if it was for, you know, one of the toy lines or if one of the DVDs was coming out. But of course, San Diego Comic Con, they always have these crazy promotions. And they had these inflatable He-Man power swords. And they were really cool. And I think I actually got two of them. But unfortunately, they were really, because they were free promos, they're really cheap. And both of them, you know, they won't inflate anymore. Like they just rotted like almost immediately. But I did actually have the power sword thing that they gave out. And then Aja also mentions that she has a collection of the Record Storybooks. I remember Record Storybooks.
Well, the thing that's interesting, I went through and I couldn't find a lot of my smaller ones. And I think I got rid of a lot of those. And I was like going, why did, and I was trying to remember why I did that. And the reason I did that is because of this big book here I'm going to showcase, because a lot of times in the studio, I have to sometimes make a choice to consolidate things down. But I have kept a lot of books and stuff too from when I was a kid. So this is actually one of the ones that I kept. This is Skeletor's Flower of Power.
Flower of Power.
And I kept a lot of these just because I thought they were just kind of fun. It's kind of weird because just I've had these since I was a kid. And that's the main reason I typically will keep them. I mean, the artwork in here, it's interesting. It's a little crude. Not crude in a negative way, just crude in general. But I do still have this one. And this is another one that was a gift to me when I was a kid, too, that I still have. And then let's set this one up. So, you know, I gave my review of the show in questions on the last episode. So if you didn't see it, go check out our last episode where we talked about the Master Universe movie and I talked about the Kevin Smith series. And the thing that really struck me was, I know that when Sarah Michelle Gellar was out doing interviews, she was talking about the fact that, you know, there was no female characters, strong female characters, like front and center, that they weren't really featured and all this other stuff. And immediately I thought about this book I've had since I was a child that's called Teela's Secret. And if you notice, He-Man isn't even on the cover.
Focused on female characters, if only, you know.
Yeah, and He-Man isn't even on the cover. You see that? He's not even on the cover. So there you go. I'm just going to throw that out there because I just thought that was weird that they were talking about that. And this is the one that delves into the whole origin of Teela.
Yeah, I remember that story in the Filmation series. I remember that story very, very well in the Filmation series. Which, again, counters Sarah Michelle Gellar's point, which of course was just crap that she was fed by the studio. I'm sure. I don't think she knows anything about He-Man, honestly. Let's just be real here, you know. It's such a great example. We keep finding great examples of this, that this narrative, this false narrative that there were never female characters before, they were just in the background, and you know, this is the first time ever we have female characters in diversity. It is complete garbage, folks. It is a complete garbage argument. It's revisionism. It's lies. It's bold-faced lies. We're proving it all the time on the air. In this case, with an actual physical item. Dave, by the way, when's the copyright for that? Just so we have disclosure. When was that published?
All right. So this is a golden book. Like, it's not a golden storybook, but it is a golden book. Let's see here. Library of Congress, catalog number, blah, 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 blah. 1985.
There you go. 1985. So right at the height of the 80s, in the mid-80s. Yes, folks, they did actually focus on female characters. This is not a new thing.
And I just want to put this out there. Like, I'm a dude. You know, this was given to me as a gift as a kid. Like, someone thought I would like this because I liked He-Man and the Masters Universe. So, you know, in my review of the new series, you know, I said, yeah, it's okay. You know, I mean, but I could also see where it would upset a lot of people. I don't, like I said, I don't need to go back to it because I love the film. The Masters Universe film for me is how I like to think of He-Man ending. And, you know, it didn't ruin my childhood. You know, I still have all these things from when I was a kid. I was showing off those mini comics earlier. I've had all this stuff since I was a child. So, you know, it didn't ruin my, you know, my fandom, or any of this kind of stuff. It's just like they always say, it's like if something doesn't really appeal to you, you don't have to watch it.
Exactly.
You know, if you like it, go ahead.
That's my position. I'm not watching it. I have no intention of watching it. I don't need to. I know what it is. Thanks to Kevin Smith. He already told me what it's about. So, you know, basically the day after. So I don't need it. You know, Aja, she brings it up. She says, yeah, there were a lot of amazing female characters. once they got popular, boom, She-Ra. Great point. That's exactly true, because I think that if they didn't think the female characters were popular, like Teela, Evelyn, the Sorceress, which were all very important characters. Also, Adam's mother. I remember her backstory was really cool because she was an astronaut from Earth. And they did a really cool episode on her backstory. Again, she makes a great point. Once they got popular, boom, She-Ra. That's a great example. I think she's right. I think that's why they did She-Ra, because the female characters were popular, so they decided to make a female-centric show, right? Why would they do that otherwise? Why would they do that otherwise? We never saw a Ken show for Barbie, you know what I mean? So it's like, I think you hit the nail right on the head. Those characters were popular. They were considered central. So they made a female-centric show. Yeah, you know? Asia, you're right. Evelyn was hot. So, you know, that's a lot of people thought that, you know? So, absolutely, absolutely. Again, a lot of the stuff we're hearing these days is full revisionism. And this is the first appearance, right? So you can see, it's a different version of Teela. Teela's right there, right? Teela's right there from the beginning.
Is the original version of the Sorceress, too.
Yeah, that always confused me, by the way. Because I was like, how come the Sorceress looks different in the cartoon than in the toy? So I couldn't quite understand that.
So I have one more book I want to show off here that I would highly recommend for He-Man Master of the Universe fans, regardless whether you like how you feel about the new show at all. This book, published by Dark Horse, this is The Art of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. This book is absolutely incredible. This thing is like super crazy cool. Like, I mean, this book is awesome.
Wow, that's a cool image on the back there. I like that for our listeners. Skeletor with Evelyn laid out on the bottom there. I do like that. I do dig that image. That's pretty cool.
And this book has in it a lot of Earl Norum's artwork. I am a huge fan of Earl Norum. Who was a painter who did a lot of the early Marvel magazine covers, like Hulk and stuff like that. I loved his artwork. And he did a lot of the Conan magazine covers too. But this thing right here is absolutely incredible. This I can't recommend this enough if you're a He-Man fan. This book is incredible. Just absolutely an incredible, incredible book. So I can't recommend this one enough.
How much did that retail for when you first got that?
I'm pretty sure it was pretty pricey, $40. Yeah, it was $40. And I think I've showed this book off on the show before, but I mean the artwork in this thing. I mean, look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very cool.
So, I mean, it's just all this thing is full of is just incredible, incredible artwork.
There's a lot of great art associated with He-Man, whether you're talking about the concept art or the stuff that actually came out for the figures themselves. And of course, obviously, the classic Filmation cartoon. There's a lot of great art associated with He-Man. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of She-Ra stuff in here, too. I mean, it's just the thing in this is just look at this. I mean, just like incredible, incredible stuff. I can't recommend this book enough if you're a He-Man fan.
All the 5,000 sit-ups he did to look like that.
Yeah. I didn't think he did sit-ups. I thought it was just the sword, right? Isn't the sword is what gives him the abs and the whole thing?
But Adam looks exactly like him, so obviously he must have done something. So
now the Barbarian He-Man, is a different story. This guy clearly was working out. He was a mighty hunter and a provider, right? So he came by that honestly. So I do have a few more things in my collection I want to showcase here real quick. We're probably going to wind up running a little long. These things are dusty as all get out, but this is my Triclops from when I was a kid. I always love Triclops. It's one of my favorites. I actually dressed up as Triclops, actually when Triclops was brand new, actually for Halloween one year. If you're curious to check that out, check out my Facebook page and look at my profile pictures. You'll find a picture of me as a little kid dressed as Triclops. And I am quite a fan of Skeletor, as is my little brother. And I have quite a collection of Skeletor things. This is a zipper pull.
Zipper pull.
Yeah, it's got the little clip on it. You put on there, you use it to pull your zipper of your jacket. But this is a Skeletor zipper pull. This is vintage, by the way. This is very retro and vintage. This is actually an eraser that survives to this day of Skeletor. This is a Skeletor eraser. And then this is like a clip. I don't know what you'd use it for, but I've had this forever too. But this is a Skeletor, like a little clip thing. You know, it's like, you know, you have parents and stuff and whatever, and they know you like this stuff, but they're not sure what to get you, and they get you those really weird things, and you're just like, I don't know what this is all about, but okay. Let me show that one off last. So this is one of my favorite things I still have to this day. This is a vintage Skeletor right here. He's got his Havoc staff, or his Ram staff, as I used to call it back in the day. And then there's his panther, which is really cool. I do have his half of the power sword too, but I always prefer for him to have the power staff and He-Man to have the sword. So
yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. But I'm a big Skeletor fan, so we're gonna mostly showcase Skeletor. It's like he's coming at you, Eric. He's gonna get
you.
There
you go.
Primarily focus on Skeletor stuff. And then this, because some of this stuff actually does stay in a box, but this is the thing that's been out in the studio forever. This was a gift, actually, by my friend Len Workman. He had this as a child, and he gave me this one. And this is a bank. I used to, and Len knows I used to do this, but I love to go get the little banks that they have that they, you know, give to kids or sell to kids to put your change and stuff in, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because
they're kind of neat, because they're little mass-produced pop culture little busts, you know, and statues and stuff. I always thought they were kind of neat. And I have quite a few of them. I actually have like a vintage Batman one and all kinds of stuff back of, you know, maybe we should do a contest and get a tour of the studio. But there's a vintage Batman one back over there. And these are just really neat. I've always loved these. I think they're kind of neat. A lot of times you can find these at thrift stores and stuff, like super, super cheap, because, you know, it's like 50 cents or a quarter or something. But these are really kind of neat to kind of, if you're a pop culture fan, to kind of put around, like, you know, wherever you have your collection, whether it's a man cave or whatever, or even, I don't know, just if you're a collector, if you like this stuff, there you go. So
AJ says, so. Your house looks like hers.
Well, to an extent. A lot of this stuff, like I said, the figures have used to be out all the time. And I actually, I put them up just because I needed the room for a lot of the equipment. Actually, I use for Kirby Tees now. The equipment for Kirby Tees actually takes up a lot of room over here. A lot of the printers and different things. And then, I had to, get a new printer scanner for my new gig that I'm working on. That I'm under an NDA that I can't talk about yet, but hopefully I'll be able to talk about that soon. I've always been a big He-Man fan. I've always loved this stuff. And part of the reason that really David Mott says David Beatty's Museum of Pop Culture. Well, the funny thing is, the stuff that's still out is actually really cool. I don't know if you guys can tell, but literally behind me above my drawing board is and actually in the whole studio is a lot of original artwork. I'm a big original artwork guy, and a lot of the artwork that I have here that actually is framed and hangs is actually artwork by people who've either mentored me or inspired me. You know, like one of the key pieces back here is a piece penciled by Scott Clark. It's the actual pencils. There's a daily Superman comic strip that ran in newspapers nationwide when Superman the movie came out, the first Chris Reeve movie. I have an original Filmation animation cell of Captain Marvel. A lot of people know him as Shazam now, but the original Captain Marvel, I have an actual animation cell with the painted background back here above my desk. So there's a lot of cool things that I have in here, and it's from a lifetime of collecting. And a lot of the pages and things I own are actually before all the craze on collecting the original comic book art really started. And a large percentage of it were gifts too. I've got original Batman animated series page back there. So it's fun stuff. It's fun stuff. I wouldn't call it a museum. It's kind of a tapestry of the things that make me at the end of the day. That's for sure.
Hollywood Jackson had a comment earlier, and he was saying that he has some of those Batman record storybooks. Do you have any of those record storybooks? I remember them, but I never had any of them.
Yeah, I do, actually. My favorite one is actually Batman and Robin, The Case of the Laughing Sphinx, which is actually a Fisher-Price one. And I still have the book, and I have the tape. The tape doesn't play anymore, but sometimes late at night, someone actually dubbed it over and actually uploaded it on YouTube, so you might be able to still find actually the audio. And they actually like recorded the pages from the book, so you can actually see the book and then listen to the story. And this is going to sound super nerdy and weird, but sometimes when I couldn't sleep at night, because I used to do this when I was a kid, I would actually turn that on and listen to it as I fell asleep. And sometimes, it sounds bad, even as an adult, I'll turn that YouTube one on and listen to it, and it helps me fall asleep.
Makes sense. Makes sense. So. It's a warm memory from your child.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have any more Master of the Universe stuff to show off, Dave?
Nope. That's it. I think that's probably more than enough. Probably too much. Probably ran too long, but I wanted to get into it and just talk about my fandom and showcase some of this stuff and just tell everyone, you know, it didn't ruin my fandom, everybody. I still love He-Man. It doesn't have to ruin your fandom. But for those of us who grew up with it, if you want to collect it and if you want to get into this stuff, I highly recommend go look for those mini comics. Go look for those vintage comics. Go look for the original action figures. You know, go look for the original toys. Those are the things that are kind of fun.
Yeah, Aja mentions that she popped her. I'm assuming she had a similar cassette. She said she popped hers into her Teddy Ruxpin.
There you go. So
that would be fun. That would be fun. I never had Teddy Ruxpin either. I always wanted him. Never had him as a kid. All right, now I wanted to get into some ghost of the recently. Just this is kind of like breaking news right now. Or there's just been an announcement that there's going to be some Ghostbuster Afterlife toys coming out. So those of you in the Rogues Gallery, I'm really curious what you think about Ghostbusters Afterlife. There was a new trailer that dropped. If you saw the trailer, if you haven't seen the trailer, if you're looking forward to this film, if you're not looking forward to this film, but this is Collector's Corner, so we're going to talk a little bit about these toys. And again, this is like basically like breaking news. It's a couple days old. This is a July 27th article from CNET. It says, Ghostbusters Afterlife action figures put Bill Murray and the original cast back in uniform. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ernie Hudson joined the movie's new characters in Hasbro's impressively detailed Plasma Series toys. So here's a first look we got over here of a plastic Peter Venkman, a.k.a. Bill Murray. As you can see, it looks like they got the likeness rights and all that stuff. That's a big criticism of the original Ghostbusters toys because they, of course, were based on the cartoon and not based on the movie. There have been, of course, lots of movie toys since then, but this is kind of interesting because this might be the first time we're actually getting like sort of of the original Ghostbusters, like when the movie's actually coming out, you know? So, because, you know, again, they never really made any merchandise, you know, any action figures specifically for the movie. Ghostbusters action figures, you know, were all based on the cartoon series. So this is kind of cool. You have a reaction to this, Dave? Have you seen this figure before, the new Bill Murray figure that's going to be coming out?
I think I saw this image in like a search or something like a little while ago by accident. And then by a little while ago, I mean like the last day or two. I was talking to someone about the Ghostbusters Afterlife trailer, and I was like, have you seen it? And they're like, no, and I was trying to find it, and I thought I might have seen something about this. But I wasn't sure if it was a fan-made custom or if it was legit, and I didn't really click on it because it wasn't exactly what I was looking for. But that's pretty cool, and I guess it does kind of confirm that we should hopefully get the original Ghostbusters in some capacity in the new movie. So that's
yeah. Cool. I mean, obviously, this would imply that we're gonna actually see them in action. You can see he's got the gray hair. Clearly, this is meant to be to represent him as he's going to look in the movie. It says here that these toys are part of Hasbro's Plasma series. They're detailed 6-inch Ghostbuster action figures with a selection of accessories. The line will feature models of an older Peter Venkman, a.k.a. Bill Murray, Raymond Stans, a.k.a. Dan Aykroyd, and Winston Zeddemore, a.k.a. Ernie Hudson, as they appear in the 2021 movie. So in a way, that's a little bit of a spoiler, right? So it's like, so they're saying this is the way they're going to show up in the movie. It says Ghostbusters Afterlife, which also stars Paul Rudd, will release in U.S. theaters on November 11th, 2021. So we still got a little ways to go. So here's the new characters. So it says here that Phoebe is going to be available later this year. It says the release date may vary by market. But with the new characters we've got pictured here is Lucky. This is from basically from if you're looking like left to right. So it's basically Lucky, Trevor, Podcast, and then also Phoebe at the end there. And then we can see that they also, if you've seen the new trailer, you can see the new Ghostbuster trap there too. You see that in the bottom there, Dave?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of neat. That's kind of an interesting addition, I think, to sort of Ghostbusters lore, if you will. This mobile trap that they have that's kind of almost reminds me of like a drone or something like that. Article goes on to say the figures will go on sale fall of 2021. So apparently we do not have a good set release date yet. So they're just saying fall of 2021. Obviously, it's going to be around when the movie comes out. Probably a little bit before, I'm guessing, since they're already releasing these images. It says they're going to be $23 each. International prices are not available, but for those of you that are, from other parts of the world, that's about £20 or about $40 Australian. So, these are pretty neat. These are pretty good images, by the way. If you want to check out this CNET article, they do have some very good images of pretty much all the figures, so you can check them out. And I think they look pretty good, even though I'm not like a huge fan of the six inch scale, to be honest with you. I much more prefer the 3¾ scale. That's why I'm always advocating the Marvel, the Marvel Legends line, the retro Marvel Legends line, the Kenner Marvel Legends line, however you want to refer to it. These are some interesting looking figures. And again, it's kind of a little bit of a spoiler there, I guess, because we're getting to see the original Ghostbusters, the surviving original Ghostbusters, as they're going to appear in the film. So I think that's really cool. And I think that's good news. That's what I'm thinking. What do you think, Dave? I think that's good news. I'm that makes me a little bit more anxious and a little bit it calms some of my fears about Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Well, I saw the trailer and I thought the trailer looked really good. To me, we have yet to see, but I do have a feeling that maybe Ghostbusters Afterlife will continue in the tradition of kind of like what Cobra Kai did. It's going to give us some new characters and kind of set up sort of like a next generation. So maybe there will be like some baton passing, but I think like Cobra Kai, they're going to do it in a way that kind of works, you know what I mean? And pays respect to the original characters and the original movies and is in universe and in continuity. So that's what I'm hoping for anyway. That's, fingers crossed, because that's what the trailer looks like, especially with the way the trailer ends, Ray answering the phone, and now that we know because of these action figures that they probably are going to play a role in some capacity. So that's really cool to me. I think that's really exciting. So.
Yeah, totally. I'm cautiously optimistic. I've been burned so many times. It's hard for me to just go, full in and just jump into the pool, so to speak, because I have been burned so many times. But this image right here of where you can see the surviving original Ghostbusters in their original Ghostbuster gear in toy form, it's hard for me to believe they would invest in this and it wouldn't be something that happens in the movie. Although this hasn't been 100% confirmed yet. So in a way it's kind of you can almost regard it as somewhat of a rumor, because certainly toys are released that are quote unquote like inspired by the movie and things like that, not necessarily an appearance. AJ mentions that she's like, yeah, I'm hyped. As far as the trailer, I saw it. It's an Easter egg fest. Very, very true. Very, very true. There's a lot of Easter eggs in those trailers. David Motz also says, I saw the trailer. It looks good. I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see it. AJ goes on to say that it gives a great backstory and a tribute to Egon. I think that that's pretty obvious. That's the direction they're going. I think we all want that as Ghostbuster fans. We definitely want to see Egon represented. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. David Motz asked the question, though, where is Slimer? Where is Slimer? Well, David Motz, maybe that's something that they're still waiting for. Although I do remember in the trailer there was a very Slimer-esque ghost. I would say that's how I don't think it was Slimer, but there was definitely a very Slimer-like ghost that I saw in the trailer. Did you see that, David?
Yeah, I mean, are you talking to David Motz or are you talking to me? We got
it gets confusing sometimes. So we're all talking right now. So did you see like I thought I saw a very Slimer like ghost in the trailer. So
that's the ghost. It looks like they're actually when they're in the car and the ghost trap comes out. That's like on the RC car and it's going out. That definitely looks like it's Slimer. I mean, that would be my best guess.
And then AJ says, there is no Slimer, only Zool. And she says, you can see Zool emerging in the trailer. I don't think I caught that. Did you catch that, Dave?
No, I'm going to say I didn't catch that. I mean,
that's interesting.
Well, I saw something I guess might be, but I honestly didn't. You know, it's kind of weird because the trailer looked good. So once I saw the trailer looked good and I got excited for it, a lot of times with this stuff, unless it's something Eric and I are specifically going to talk about for the show, a lot of times I will choose at that point to stop looking at things because I'd rather, keep some of the excitement. Like the only reason I've seen as much stuff, for example, as the Top Gun sequel as I have is because of the delays. I mean, without the delays, I don't think I would have watched as much stuff as I've seen, surrounding the Top Gun sequel. But, Ghostbusters, Top Gun. I mean, these are some of my favorite movies from my childhood. Actually, Top Gun is one of my favorite movies of all time, period. So I'm really excited about that too. And Top Gun and this movie both, based on what I'm seeing so far, I think they're going to do, like I said, I'm going to use the Cobra Kai as the litmus test. I think that both of these properties might be able to pass the baton like Cobra Kai did and still pay homage and have fun and bring back fan favorite characters and give us a really great fun experience at the movie theater.
It is interesting, specifically with Cobra Kai, and Dave and I are both big fans of that show and big supporters of that show. And I think we both say this is the way that you do it right. This is the right way to do that, to continue on a series like that. I will say, from what I'm seeing with Ghostbusters Afterlife, the emphasis is definitely going to be different. I think the emphasis is definitely going to be on the kids and not on the original Ghostbusters. So I would qualify that just my own personal opinion of what I'm seeing so far. But then again, it could be different because there are times, especially now in Hollywood, they do tend to try to surprise us. That's a big thing in Hollywood, to quote unquote defy your expectations. So the fact that they aren't showing the original Ghostbusters in these trailers, it could be that they're hiding it. That is a possibility. But I will say, at least from what I'm seeing right now, I don't think that's the way it's going to go. I think it is going to be more an emphasis on the kids. And my hope is that the original Ghostbusters don't end up being kind of like almost an afterthought or an asterisk or a glorified cameos. Those are the concerns I always have with these kind of things.
Well, and my hope is that, it is going to focus on the kids. You could tell by the trailer that is the core focal point of the story. Cobra Kai, while it focuses on Johnny, we spend a lot of time with Miguel. So I do think that there is definitely a lot of room, to focus on, Egon's, family, and kind of what happened to him, and bring the Ghostbusters in later in the movie. I mean, I have a lot of high hopes for this. I mean, I really think, based on what I'm seeing, the trailer's got a lot of care, with how it's put together. I find it to be, like I said, as a Ghostbusters fan, to me, it kind of fits. They had that Ghostbusters cartoon show that came out later that was a little bit more kind of 90s and goth and whatever, that was like some of them were like the kids, you know, kind of inheriting the Ghostbusters idea. And to me, this looks like a movie version of that idea. So
originally, you know, ironically, the main, you know, original Ghostbuster for that was Egon, which is kind of ironic and I guess sad in a way, because that's not possible now. You know, you can't use that particular formula. You know, so in some ways, I think that maybe that there is a little bit of a tribute to that going on as well. So, you know, we'll just have to see. But AJ says, I'm really looking forward to it. It feels like fan service in a good way to me. It's being done right, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I agree, you know, that there are times that, you know, fan service can be a good thing, you know. So we'll just have to see exactly, you know, what it's like when it comes out. And yes, Ghostbusters Extreme. That's what we were talking about, AJ.
That's it. Thank you. I could not remember the name of that.
I wasn't that into it, to be honest with you, but I was definitely aware of it because I may have been a bigger fan of the cartoon than the movies, to be honest with you. I love the cartoon. So
cartoon,
I
remember was great.
Growing up on that, and I really liked the real Ghostbusters, the cartoon version. So, you know, I like all of them. You know, I like, you know, the original, and I like the cartoon. Totally skipped the 2016 movie. It's another thing I just said, I don't need to watch it, you know, not going to. But as far as the original movie and the animated series, it was very, very into both. Very, very into both.
We've had some really good cartoon series that were very interesting continuations of movies. Like, regardless of how you feel about the 90s Godzilla movie, that cartoon they produced is actually pretty good. And then Men in Black had a really great cartoon. I really liked that Men in Black cartoon that came after the first film. That was a really good cartoon, and it ran for a good little while. I mean, I mostly remember Extreme Ghostbusters, and I watched a few episodes primarily because I think I've talked before about my comic book background, you know, that I got my start, you know, as a ghost, you know, drawing. That's ironic because we're talking about Ghostbusters. I started my as a ghost artist. So I drew a lot of backgrounds and different things, on different books and stuff. And the main reason I was familiar about with Extreme Ghostbusters is because Jim Hall, who I ghosted for at one time, he actually was, I think, either working on the comic book or actually doing character designs for the cartoon, one or the other or both. I don't remember. And I remembered him talking about it. So,
well, there you go. Now, did you have anything for pop culture news, Dave?
I don't, because I knew I was going to run along and all this He-Man stuff, so I decided just to focus on that for this evening. And there's a lot of stuff happening, but it's just too much, and I felt like I really needed to, you know, since I was going to take up so much time, I didn't want to get too far into other stuff.
All right, so we're going to move on to Streaming Wars, and we're going to move on to a big story that I think everybody is talking about right now. In fact, I literally mean everybody. There are tons of people that just normally aren't even online right now, and they're online right now talking about this. So what am I talking about? So if you haven't heard, there is an interesting story out of Variety that came out today. And this is a July 29th article. This is breaking news. So the title of this article reads, Scarlett Johansson sues Disney for breach of contract over Black Widow release. Says Disney's decision to release Black Widow on Disney Plus at the same time it hit theaters has sparked a legal battle with Scarlett Johansson, the actress tasked with playing the Marvel superhero. In a lawsuit filed Thursday in Los Angeles Superior Court, attorneys for Johansson allege that the star's contract was breached when the studio opted not to debut the film exclusively in theaters, a move they claim depressed ticket sales for the Avengers spinoff. Much of Johansson's compensation was tied to the box office performance of Black Widow. If it hit certain benchmarks, bonuses would kick in. By the way, I think that means that it's not hitting those benchmarks. I'm just throwing that in there. Disney intentionally induced Marvel's breach of the agreement without justification in order to prevent Miss Johansson from realizing the full benefit of her bargain with Marvel, the suit reads. So as Disney announced in March that Black Widow would premiere spontaneously on the studio's subscription-based streaming service for a premium $30 price, as well as on the big screen. Anybody, if you've ever watched this show before, you know I hate this model. I think it's disgusting. I will never, ever use this. I hate the fact that I already pay a subscription fee to Disney Plus, and then on top of that, I have to pay a premium for certain movies. I will never do it. Never, never, never. And I advise you not to do it either. If you want to discourage this business model, I say don't do it either. The move was made as the movie theater industry was rebounding from the pandemic. It says on July 9th, Black Widow set a pandemic-era box office record with its $80 million debut in North America and earned an additional $78 million overseas. It also pulled in $60 million on Disney+. Ticket sales steeply declined in subsequent weeks and currently stand at $319 million globally, putting Black Widow on track to become one of the lowest-grossing Marvel movies of all time. Of course, it is interesting to note that $60 million amount on Disney Plus, and I guess we'll see if that goes up or not. So shortly after the debut, the National Association of Theater Owners, the industry's main trade organization, asserted the simultaneous release of Black Widow in theaters and on streaming, quote, cost Disney money in revenue per viewer over the life of the film. Interestingly enough, the suit notes that Disney's stock price rose after the company disclosed their rental figures. So here's another quote from the lawsuit. It says, Disney chose to placate Wall Street investors and pad its bottom line rather than allow its subsidiary Marvel to comply with the agreement. Note, to no one's surprise, Disney's breach of the agreement successfully pulled millions of fans away from the theater and towards its Disney Plus streaming service. There is a little bit more to this article. You can check it out on Variety. But the bottom line is that Scarlett Johansson feels that she is being ripped off and that Disney did this sort of deliberately. They knew what the repercussions were. They knew what her contract said. And this is really interesting in the context of the streaming wars. You know, Dave, I recall when we talked about, it's been a while, but we talked about when the Writers Guild was finishing up their lawsuit with CBS All Access. It's kind of interesting. It was like the almost part of the official rebranding. It was one of the last CBS All Access articles that was out there. The Writers Guild had sued CBS All Access because basically for the same thing. Because what's happening is because the rights, when it comes to your residuals and things like that, or maybe there's certain benchmarks, or maybe you have a point system, all those different ways that Hollywood compensates their talent. And that includes writers, right? Directors, all sorts of other folks besides actors. There is a lot of stuff that is basically out of date. It doesn't take into account the streaming services. It doesn't take into account this little hybrid thing that they're doing where, you know, Disney Plus is streaming, but it's also basically doing video on demand, right? It's doing both. It's doing the subscription and video on demand models at the same time. And apparently, Scarlett Johansson's contract didn't cover that. Which is really interesting because you would think, at least I would think, Scarlett Johansson, you know, being sort of an A-list celebrity and the team that she has, you would think they would think about that. And they would have these things put into her contract so that if something like this had happened, that she would get, you know, the proper compensation that she believes that she deserves, right? That she would have gotten if it had been a theater exclusive, right? Because that's the argument here, is that by doing both, you're basically depressing the value at the box office for the theater, and thus she's losing money because her contract doesn't cover the streaming stuff, or at least not in the same way. So it's really interesting, and I think this is really interesting in the context, the overall context of the streaming wars, because it really does talk about how talent is compensated when it comes to these different streaming platforms and these different streaming models. One part of this article I didn't read was they mentioned that because we criticize Time Warner, we criticize Warner Brothers all the time. Warner Brothers didn't do this. Warner Brothers did do bonuses to their stars for all the films that are showing up on HBO Max. They did compensate them. In other words, they did decide to appease them. So I think it's really interesting.
And I'll do that one better. We talked about, I think last episode or episode before last, we talked about, I mentioned how important it is to read the contracts, right?
Right.
When you're signing a contract, it's important to always read your contract. Never had a chance to do this before, so allow me to do this right now. Let me thank my former boss, Jim Lee. for actually making a point to make sure that the creators working over at DC Comics under his tenure actually see a portion of the digital sales of the comic books, you know, Warner Brothers and DC Comics. Now, other professionals may feel differently. This is my personal opinion I'm about to give you. But Jim Lee said that he wanted to do right by the comics creators when they set up the deals that they set up with Comixology and stuff. And because of that, because of the contracts that they gave us to sign that were addendums and additions, I see a small percentage. If you buy Batman Incorporated on Comixology, I actually see a small residual for that because of the work that Jim Lee and Dan DiDio actually did over at DC Comics, and the fact that Warner Brothers wanted to make sure that we were compensated. I said before that it's weird, but Len Wein, great writer, huge fan of his, one of my favorite writers of all time, wrote the comic book that inspired me to get into the comic industry in the first place, everybody, Batman versus the Incredible Hulk. Love Len Wein and got to meet him many years. Len's since passed away, but he's used to tell us all the time, he would do it on panels, he would say it one-to-one talking to people, that he saw more money for his creation of Lucius Fox for the Christopher Nolan movies than he ever saw for his creation of Wolverine.
Right.
So that's just crazy when you think about that. Wolverine, he doesn't see anything for Wolverine, but he does see money actually for Lucius Fox, or did. And so just want to personally, publicly thank, Jim Lee and Dan DiDio and the folks over at DC and Warner Brothers that were there at that time, and do it right by creators. Because you're right, Eric, that's the thing. When people talk bad about Warner Brothers and stuff and whatever in DC, sometimes I'll come out and defend them when it comes to these kind of matters, because irregardless of how you feel about how they handled it at the end of the day, or if it is or isn't enough or whatever, we can debate that until we're all blue in the face. But at least they did try to do something to make sure that we were compensated for the work that we did. And I highly, highly appreciate that as a creator.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that actually speaks to the corporate culture that they have over there at Time Warner, which, again, Dave and I, we have no problem sometimes making fun of their decisions or things like that. But I can tell you, it says right here, that basically, it says, with the rise of streaming services such as Netflix has removed many forms of compensation, and the decision by traditional movie studios like Warner Brothers and Disney to release films on their own in-house subscription services has further upended these old ways of doing business. When Warner Brothers opted to send its entire film slate to HBO Max, realizing the movie theaters were only operating at a limited capacity for much of the year, the studio had to pay tens of millions of dollars to the stars of those films. That resulted in actors such as Will Smith, Denzel Washington, Keanu Reeves earning their full back end on the movies that Warner Brothers released on its new service. So again, contrast this to the way that Disney is doing business, the way that Marvel has been doing business and is still doing business under Disney. This is really interesting, and it's really interesting to think of how this might have an effect on the streaming wars going forward. Because, hey, if you're talent, I would much rather work for Warner Brothers at this point than for Disney. I mean, it's pretty obvious. I mean, it's pretty crystal clear that you're going to be taken care of better by Warner Brothers than you are by Disney.
And I had a friend many, many years ago who told me, they gave me the advice. They said, don't work for Disney. And I'm like, why? It's like, because they'll find a way to own anything you ever draw from that moment on. And I don't begrudge Disney whatever, but it is weird when you think about it. Like I said, Marvel's got a history of this. I mentioned before, I didn't get to do a lot of work over at Marvel with an actual name credit. But the one book I did get to work on, which was X-Men Sword of the Braddocks with Scott Clark, they reprinted that and repackaged that in all these different ways because that's an early Psylocke number one, the X-Men character, Psylocke. And, Scott and I never saw anything beyond the initial release, regardless of how you feel about the book, it's just funny because, let's see, what's the worst thing I ever worked on over at DC? The thing that I when people show it to me, I feel bad. Grifter Zero is pretty bad. And that the first thing that I worked on at DC, I got a credit for, Cry for Justice, that last issue of Cry for Justice that Scott and I did together. That book was super rushed because we had to turn our portion of that book around in a weekend, and it was rough. But, you know, I see more for that. I see more for the 6 or 8 pages that we did as a fill-in, as a part of a Titans issue. Like, all these Mr. Terrific, like, we were on Mr. Terrific for, like one issue we filled in. Like, I see more for Mr. Terrific than I ever saw for the X-Men book I worked on over at Marvel.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. Again, this is just a contrast in the business practices between what Disney's doing and Warner Brothers, and specifically what they're doing with streaming, they're doing in the streaming wars, and how they're adjusting to this sort of new reality. And again, I'm going to give it to Warner Brothers that they're doing it right. You know what I mean? You can be upset about the fact that they're releasing everything on HBO Max simultaneously, but you know what? They're doing it in a way much better than Disney Plus is, much better than Disney's doing it. And again, they're supporting the people that actually were involved in the creation of this stuff and not ripping them off as, you know, CBS has done and as Disney is doing, okay? Because there's a difference between these companies. There really is. David Motz mentions, he says, I would rather support local theaters than Disney Plus. David Motz, I am right with you. I will absolutely support theaters more than I will support Disney Plus any day of the week. I'd much rather pay that premium price at the theater. That includes the popcorn, that includes the soda, all that stuff that you may say is overpriced. But hey, I understand how the industry works, and I know that the theater isn't getting most of that ticket price, especially the first 2 weeks, that special engagement. That's what that means. Basically, your theater's not getting any of that ticket or very little of that ticket price. They're getting that money through the popcorn and the soda and all that other kind of stuff. So I agree with you, David Motz. Any day of the week, I would much rather support a local theater than Disney Plus. Asia mentions, she says, I keep HBO. They give me my movies, but regarding Scarlett Johansson, and we did talk about this a little bit, her team should adjust with the times. And that is one of the surprising aspects of this article. Like, I can see writers not understanding this, because writers generally don't have the same level of representation that an actor does, right? Just in general. You can just say that in general. But when we're talking about Scarlett Johansson, she is A-list. I mean, she's A-list. I mean, there's no debating that. She's an A-list actress, right? So the fact that her team didn't look into this or foresee this at all, granted, Black Widow came out, you know, before the, you know, was being filmed or whatever, before the pandemic and everything. But the fact that they couldn't see the writing on the wall, I mean, we've been talking about the streaming wars for years now, basically, you know, this has been heating up for a while. And the fact that you wouldn't look into that, you know, or your representation wouldn't look into that. And, you know, maybe they did, you know, there might be more to this lawsuit than meets the eye, but on, just on the surface of it, I would have thought that they kind of would have covered this a little bit better as far as the rights from streaming, because streaming's been around for a long time. Been around for a long time.
Very interesting. And talking about doing things right, packages did actually go out for our contest winners from our previous episodes. David Motz, I hadn't put yours in the mail just yet, but that's because I did throw some names in a hat. You actually, on a previous episode, had won the Sabretooth and Wolverine Impel 1990 Marvel Universe card. And then I threw all the names in a hat and actually drew your name actually for these. So you actually also won a Silver Surfer and Galactus 1990 Marvel Universe Impel card. So I'm going to be putting all those in the mail going to you. And then I was going to say, we haven't had a lot of commenters, but Hollywood Jackson, I definitely owe you a package. And then is it Asia or Aja?
Aja. It almost sounds like saying Asia.
Asia. Well,
and you correct me if I'm wrong, okay? But that's the way it is. In my head, it's almost like you're just saying Asia. Like an Asian, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, I didn't know if you...
And right from the horse's mouth, there it is. Yes,
there you go.
Like, it's just like saying Asia, like an Asian person. Yeah.
So I didn't know if you had a copy of this yet, but I do have another copy, actually, the Dragon's Gift. I'm going to send one to Eric, but I do have another copy of the Dragon's Gift. I want to thank you for your comments on tonight's episode. So if you'll just message me your address or a mailing address you'd like me to send something to, I'm going to drop this Master Universe He-Man mini comic, a vintage original one, no less. Drop this in the mail to you. I'll probably be going out early next week. And David Monsters will be going out early next week. And those of you who have owed stuff to, Hollywood, I don't have yours together just yet because I've got a giant box I'm putting together for you. But John McClay, your stuff went out. All that stuff should hopefully be arriving shortly.
We've got some gratitude here from Asia. So oh. She says, yes. Yes. Honey, thank you. So
you're more than welcome.
We did have just a brief shout out here from Sir John. Sir John, he says, I'm back. Sir John, it's good to have you on the stream over there from YouTube. Because we have been getting a lot of YouTube love lately. So it's nice to hear from you.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. I don't have anything for Streaming Wars. Do we have anything else for this week, or do we think we're good unless there's more comments in the Rogues Gallery?
I think we're good. I think we're good.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and go to the outro. I want to thank you for watching or hopefully listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. If you missed any portion of the show, if you want to check it out, you can always check us out on the replay. You can check out the replay over on the YouTube channel. We might be switching the YouTube channel maybe next week or a week after. Eric and I are discussing that just to see if we can kind of get something to happen a little bit different with YouTube, or we're feeling a little like we're kind of stuck a little bit at the moment. We want to see if maybe that might help things.
I'm putting that link in the comments, by the way, and that's going to all the different platforms. I'm just putting a link to that, to the Retro Rogues Live Show YouTube. So check that out, especially if YouTube is your preferred provider, you know, or if you maybe are considering, you know, switching, or you use YouTube every once in a while, maybe you split between different venues. I did put that link in the comments.
And I am going to be putting up on that same channel, I'm going to be putting up the remainder of the In the Studio retrospective episodes. I'm going to be putting those up on there. There's already a tutorial video of me drawing on that, because that's kind of what Eric refers to as my shadow channel. And in addition to that, too, I'm actually going to be doing new drawing videos and putting those up, and actually taking some Facebook live streams of me drawing and putting those on that channel as well. We're going to try and do some different things, see if we can grow the audience and see if we can get some more people participating in the Rogues Gallery. And hopefully all these fun things all of you will enjoy. But we want to thank you for watching and listening to this episode. So again, definitely check it out on the replay. Check out the podcast if you want. Stitcher, Spotify, doesn't matter where it is. We've got that audio show out there at a lot of different places. You can see a lot of different links actually to those actually on my personal website over at www.davebeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. As well as the Rogues Retro fanzine is actually on there as well, and that's still available for free. Got a fun Moon Knight primer in there. If you're excited about Moon Knight, check out that Moon Knight primer where I run down, in my mind, the most important issues to cover for Moon Knight. In addition to that, I want to encourage everyone to go check out my t-shirt company, Kirby Tees. That's KIRBYTS.com, Kirby Tees. Got a lot of fun things over there. Next week, I will be announcing our first retail partner for Kirby Tees, everybody. Our first retail partner, fun brick and mortar store you're going to be able to go into and actually purchase Kirby Tees if you would like to do so. We're going to have, and I am going to be next week also too, I have two brand new t-shirt designs. I'm going to be very happy and excited to actually unveil those for next week. And in addition to those are actually going to come with limited edition collectible trading cards. And these items are going to be available actually at an event I'm going to be doing in August. I'm actually going to do an actual live event in August. I'll have more information about that hopefully on next episode. So for those of you who are fans in the audience who've been thinking, I would like to get a sketch from Dave or meet Dave in person or any of that kind of nonsense, you'll be able to do that event hopefully in August. So definitely check out KirbyTees.com. Consider purchasing a Retro Rogues Live t-shirt and supporting what we're doing here. We would greatly appreciate your support. But enough about that. I want to thank my great co-host, Mr. Eric Alexander, for as always providing his unique perspective and opinion on all these fun topics we like to talk about here on the Retro Rogues Live. Eric, please tell the folks, if you're watching or listening at home, where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
Well, I'm most active on Twitter. That's at BassGod14, at BassGod14. DMs are open, so you can always contact me that way. If you comment, you know, underneath the posts there, more likely than not, I'll be the one responding to you. That's also the official Twitch. It's BassGod14. As of right now, that's still the YouTube, although we're looking at switching that out. So at least for this broadcast, that's still also the YouTube. So if you make a comment there, again, more likely than not, you'll be hearing from me. Me or Skeletor there. So Hollywood Jackson says, great show, guys. We really appreciate we really appreciate that comment, Hollywood, and we really appreciate your support, the fact that you're out here so much and that you comment and all that kind of stuff. We really appreciate that, Hollywood. David Mott says, thanks for entertaining us. Very much enjoy your show. See you next week. David Motz, we definitely want to see you next week. We, again, appreciate your support. And then there was an earlier comment that I wanted to get to. Here we go. From Asia. She says, that hurts. This is regarding Dave's earlier comment about Len Wein. It says, that hurts because my Wolverine collection alone would have bought him a boat. And with that, we'll go ahead and leave her with the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Find the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14. That's BassGod14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.